18.
He misses it.
No, he steps up. And it's Torres! Oh! What a phenomenal play by Chilwell. I mean, this is just what a well-rounded player.
Amazing.
Good morning.
Good morning. So the basket...
I did help with the chairs a second, okay. Otherwise I'm going to be a macho. No.
It's gone. The basketball court is one thing. I also feel I have a lot of pep in my step today because I'm wearing trainers because it's a new series. So that's a first for both of us. Thank you. Well, good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us for the kickoff of our brand new series called Relationship Playbook. In case you have not met me before personally, my name is Vibke Rees. I'm married to Craig, you probably guessed that. And since today there's a big focus on marriage, but it can also really work for other significant relationships in your life. I do want to say that we are going to be married 30 years in September, so I'm kind of proud of that. A little bit more about us. I was born and raised in Germany. Craig was born and raised in Wales in the UK. We have 6 children. We have 3 that are still in high school. We have 2 that are married, and 1 is getting married in September. We also have a really sweet grandbaby. Her name is Indy, Easter Bunny. So that's just a little bit about us. But I just wondered, when you heard that phrase, relationship playbook, what did you think about? I just thought, just like here, sports, teams.
Yeah,
what about
me
you?
Too. Yeah, my mind with this one, this was the title given to the series, went immediately back to that time when I was in Hamburg, Germany. You've heard me share before, I was a chaplain of the German ice hockey champions. They relocated from Munich up to Hamburg. And I was asked to be the chaplain there, and it was an amazing experience. Got to do the team talks before they went on the ice, and never played an ice hockey game in my life, but what difference does that make, right? But and they made it to the playoffs, and I remember Coach Simpson said to me, hey, Craig, I want you in there when I distribute the playoff playbook. Now, I don't know about you, but I've never been in the room with a professional team when the playbook was actually distributed. And it was an awesome experience. And basically, Coach Simpson created almost like a rite of passage. And I remember all of the players were in the locker room. I'm in the locker room as well. And he gave this passionate speech about how important it was that every single person on that team knew what they were called to do, knew what they had to do in order for that team to be successful. And he called every player by name out. He gave them, he asked them a question, actually. He said, are you committed to basically memorizing this playbook and ultimately doing your part in making sure that we can be as successful as we can possibly be? If they said yes, he would give them this kind of a medallion type thing, and then he handed them the playbook. And this went on for every single person in that team was asked the same question. And at the end of this, with everyone sitting down having their playbook, he turned to me, and I never forget this. He said, Craig, just for you to know, that's our Bible. Right, guys? And they all went, yes, that's our Bible. The playbook was that important to them.
Okay, I'm sure there's some of us in here that think, okay, that's cool, I'm not really into sports. So I looked up some other terms that would describe the same thing that what we're talking about today. And those would be terms like master plan, game plan, approach, strategy. Now we're talking.
That's your language.
That's my kind of language. And I was reminded of a scripture that most of you probably know. It's in Proverbs 29:18, and it says this: where there is no prophetic vision, people cast off restraint, but blessed is he or she who keeps the law. I looked it up in the New Living Translation, and it says it like this: when people do not accept divine guidance, they run wild, but whoever obeys the law is joyful. So our God obviously is a God of vision, of planning, of strategy. That's a good thing, according to our God. And as I look at you this morning, I'm thinking, you know, all of us really do that. We all plan and use planning in our lives. There are probably some people in here this morning who are looking to start college in the fall. And there's a lot of planning that goes into that. How are you going to afford it, first of all? Where are you going to live? What grades you need to move on each year? And if you are not doing the planning, I'm sure your parents are doing the planning. So planning, A few years back, I had been a runner for a number of years, and I'd run a lot of marathons, but I wanted to try something longer, an ultra distance. And you know, what was needed for me to do that was not a race to sign up for, or even the desire to do it. What was needed for me was a training plan to get there, and then my commitment to actually train. Some of you know that I lead the Celebrate Recovery Ministry, and in the same way, the 12 steps of recovery, Christ-centered 12 steps of recovery, are that training plan to get us to recovery if we commit to follow it the way it's designed, like millions of people have. So again, we do this all the time. We plan, we follow, we commit to things. And yet, I think we're not the only ones when it comes to marriage. We're a little bit naive to think, you know, maybe we don't need it. I think for us, we just thought we love each other, we love God, we want to be in ministry together. That's enough, right? And yet, very quickly, we realized that was not enough. We needed a little bit more. Very quickly, we realized there were a lot more things that we had not in common than things that we had in common. We were from different cultures. He's Welsh, I'm German. And we lived in Wales at the beginning of our marriage. And I realized soon, you know, a lot of Welsh people are really loud and really aggressive. And they kind of yell at each other. And that was weird to me. And then Craig kept telling me that I was really direct and blunt. And apparently Germans sometimes do that. And so there were a lot of little things that started to kind of become bigger things. And we realized we needed a little bit more. I remember well my first time attending a marriage workshop. I think I was in my late 20s. It actually was in Holland, Netherlands. I was there with some girlfriends from our church. It was a women's retreat. And we were all in a similar season in life. We had small children. We never slept. We were tired. And I remember two pieces of advice that were given to us with a lot of passion. And so the first one was this. You need a weekly date night. There's no exception. It has to be a weekly date night to connect, to share, to be together. And I think we at the time hadn't done that. I loved how the presenter said, if you are poor, which we were, and you can't afford to go to a nice restaurant, you could just go for a walk together and share. Or you could go to McDonald's and share a McFlurry. So we thought, okay, that could work.
We could do that.
The second piece of advice I thought was really bizarre. And I remember it so well because my girlfriends and I, we were just giggling. And so this was it. They probably assumed that every woman in this room was a stay-at-home mom. So she said to us, when your husband comes home from work, make sure that dinner's on the table. Make sure you change your clothes, you put makeup on, and there was even mention of that little black dress. We just were in stitches laughing, because that was just not our world. And if you think maybe I'm just making fun of what was shared there, I'm not. I'm sure some of it was really helpful, but we needed a little bit more, and it needed to go a little bit deeper for us. I think an added challenge that we had was we were in ministry and we wanted to be in ministry, but there was a lot of pressure and expectation on people in ministry to have it all together, have perfect marriages, perfect families, perfect kids, which of course we had. And
at least between the hours of 10 and 12 they were.
But that's just not helpful. In fact, it can actually lead to a lot of secrecy and inauthenticity. So when we look back on almost 30 years of marriage, I think we can both say the first 10 were probably the most challenging ones, and the last 10 have been the best. So I can't wait for the next 10.
No, me neither. That's the kind of practical advice you get given, right, when it comes to relationships. Make sure you go on a date night. Make sure that you're greeted with want to come home with a black, greet me with a black dress. Like, we needed more than a McFlurry and a black dress. That's just the reality. We had a love for God. We had a commitment to Christian ministry. We do believe that God brought us together in a profound way. I still remember the first time I saw Vicky, just hearing distinctly, this is the woman that you will marry. I knew all of that, but I still needed more. And as I look back as well, it wasn't just I needed more and we needed more practically, but we also needed more personally. I distinctly remember when we were going through that challenging period of getting to know one another and realizing that loving God and loving one another just wasn't enough. There was more needed than that. I just remember in that season being at a place in my own heart where I would magnify Vipka's weaknesses and minimize my own. Of course, I'm the only one that does that, right? And I just realized how destructive that was to us growing deeper in our own relationship. And so I recognized that I needed more personally, that I needed to have the intentionality to pursue God for myself. I remember one of my friends telling me once, he said, Craig, just recognize that when you get married, praying with your wife is no substitute for praying on your own. And in fact, developing your relationship with God on your own is a prerequisite for developing a deeper relationship with your spouse. That is so true. And as I look back on this, I just recognize that there were, in those seasons where our relationship was difficult, that difficulty coincided with the hardening of my own heart. And if you think about this, we live in a world where no fault is now common. We have no fault divorces where a couple can go to court and they can basically dissolve their marriage without any kind of person taking responsibility at all. We live in a day of no fault insurance where people can act, what, more recklessly with fewer consequences. And the upshot of that is we actually live in a world, even in a faith, where we can have a kind of no-fault approach to our relationship with God too. And in my own life, that was basically being expressed through a lack of prayer of confession and prayer of repentance. It was as if I kind of took this idea that God loves me just as I am, which is 100% true. And I took it a stage further and actually said, because God loves me just as I am, I really don't need to change. But for our marriage to be what it needed to be, what we wanted it to be, I did need to change. And my refusal to change coincided with the hardening of my own heart. And so one of the things that we recognized is that our marriage struggled when we got to the place where we magnified the other's faults and minimized our own responsibility. And we recognized that not only did we need to be intentional about the practical things we did, we also had to be intentional about our own personal walk with God. Because as we became more like Jesus individually, we became more like Jesus as a couple. And so it was that intentionality that really became critical for us.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say a disclaimer before we even continue or share the three plays that we have committed to and that we find really helpful. This is not going to work for everyone.
No.
If you find yourself in a very dysfunctional marriage or even in an abusive marriage, let me tell you there are a lot of them around us. This is not going to apply to you, so please hear that loud and clear. In fact, what we're sharing today could actually be more hurtful than helpful. It's a little bit like giving antibiotics to a person who has cancer. That is not helpful. In fact, that could kill them. So just please hear that. And please know, too, that there is help out there, and we would love to journey with you in this. So when we got married, I definitely brought some brokenness into our relationship, and you have learned to accept that you had some character defects. But
notice the phrasing on that one, folks. I grew to accept that I had character defects, yeah.
But we both had a strong commitment to one another. We had a very strong commitment to God, to loving God, to serving God. And so additionally, with these plays that we've committed to, that's really helped us to center our marriage and our walk with God on God's heart for our marriage. But I just want you to know, more than you hearing the exact plays that we're sharing, I think that's less important than you hearing just this idea of being intentional, committing to the plays, just like the players in that ice hockey team committed to those plays. It's sometimes said in churches that some people are more intentional to prepare for a two-week vacation than they are to think about eternity or is their life after death. They just don't think about it, but yet they think a lot about a vacation. And in the same way, I think we're intentional about a lot of things, but often not about the most important relationship. And you heard me mention our children, our grandchild. These are such important relationships to us, but they're not the most important ones. Maybe somebody needs to hear that today. This is my most important relationship, of course, after my relationship with God. And so important really is that we are intentional and that we know we don't just stumble into healthy marriages or relationships. And so let's share our first play. And our first play is simply this: we commit to seeing the positive in one another and not the negative. It's a commitment, a heart commitment. And as we talked about this in preparation for today, we sometimes kind of laughed and said, hey, nobody forced us to get married, at least in this country or in the countries we were born in. Nobody told us we had to get married. We chose it. Or in today's language, we joined the game. We chose to play the game.
Every time we say that, we chose this, my mind goes back to being in seminary. I was in seminary in London, and I saw a friend of mine, Elisha Mashish, and he was a Pakistani believer and loved playing cricket. That's why Elisha and I connected, because he loved playing cricket. And he was sitting on a bench, and I went out there, and I saw him there, and I sat by the side of him, and I said, Elisha, what are you doing? And he handed me some photographs. And I was shocked because there were these photographs. This is before digital technology, people. So he actually looked at photographs. And he had about 20 photographs of women. And I'm shocked. I'm like, Elijah, what are you doing? And he's like, picking my wife. Seriously, there are some parts of the world where believers have arranged marriages. And for them, love is a choice. And he says, which one do you think I should pick? I looked at him and I'm like, I can't do that. I just give it back to him. And I thought, man, culture is an incredible thing. So when Vibke and I actually say, hey, we focus on the positive, we just recognize this is a choice that we made. And we made it for a reason. And we want to stay in that reason. And I'm sure that that sounds great, right? But there are moments when it's a lot harder to do. I mean, am I the only one to ever have a text and from their spouse and for you to read it going, did I annoy her this morning? Or that seems a little short. I'm sure I'm not the only one to get those things. In a moment like that, I just remember, hey, wait a minute, Vibke loves me and whatever's going on here, this is going to be fine. This is a commitment that Vibke and I take seriously. So this is not something we said, okay, it's a sermon, so you've got to take 3 points. This is one of those things where we just say, hey, we commit to see the positive. We commit to focus on the positive. We commit to finding what God is doing. We commit to going back to God's intent for our relationship. I'm so convinced by this that whenever I do a wedding, there is a phrase that I've put in there, put in the wedding every time I look at the bride and the groom. I look at the bride and the groom, and I basically say, may you never take each other's love for granted, but may you always experience the wonder that exclaims, out of everyone in the world, you have chosen me. Vibke said to me one time, you say that all the time. Isn't it getting a little bit old? Don't you need to change it? I'm like, Vibke, I do this because this is what we commit to. We commit to finding the positive, to always remembering the joy that says, out of everybody in this world, she has chosen me. Now again, when everything is good, it sounds wonderful, but it is something that we need to find even when we're in a difficult season and a difficult situation. If you have a Bible, turn to Mark chapter 10. I just want to quickly go through this passage here because what often happens when we get in a difficult season as a couple is that we focus on the negative. We start to focus on what's wrong with them, right? Magnifying their weaknesses, minimizing our own. And this we found to be unhelpful. And what I love about this passage in Mark 10 is a couple of things. Firstly, in this passage, Jesus shifts the conversation from the language of the law, which is quick to find who's wrong, to the language of love, which is quick to show God's intent and God's grace. Secondly, what I love about this passage in Mark 10 is it's focused on marriage. Jesus is asked the question about divorce. I want you to note what Jesus does. So this is Mark 10. In verse 1, what we discover here is where this happens. Now, if you've been around Central for a while, you would have heard Brad Gray and myself say this over and over again. Whenever you read the gospel stories, it is really important to note when there is a geographical reference point, because a lot of the background to texts comes not simply through the words that are chosen, but also through the place where the event happens. So what we see in verse 1 is where this happened, the region of Judea and beyond the Jordan. Why is that important? Mark chapter 1 and verse 5 describes this exact place as the region where John the Baptist ministered. This is John's territory. Again, what it also tells us in Mark chapter 6 is that this question that Jesus is about to be asked ties directly to what happened to John the Baptist in this region. So what happened to him? Mark chapter 6, John challenges Herod Antipas and Herodias because they have got married, having divorced their spouses in order to marry one another. In that passage, John says, hey, what you have done is okay in Roman law, but in God's law, the idea of divorcing someone in order to marry someone else is not acceptable. And he challenged them. And in Mark chapter 6, Herodias was so angry that John challenged them on the basis of the law that she found a legal loophole to basically have John executed. So, when you look at this in verse 1, it's pretty clear what the context is. The context is a test. Why is it a test? They want to ask Jesus this question to bump Jesus off for treason in the same way that John was bumped off in that very reason for treason. This is the context. Totally negative. What is the negativity based on? The law. Finding fault. Okay, and this is what I love about this. So in verse 2, okay, and verse 3, that this starts to unpack this. Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? And Jesus goes on, okay, verses 3, 4, and 5. Basically, what did Moses command you? What does the Jewish law say? Okay, well, this is what the Jewish law says. Jesus says, hey, go and do likewise. But this is the point. Everything is negative. What's the fault? Test, test. In negative situations in our marriage, that's where we go to. We just go to the negative. We go to find the fault. That's where we go. Wait a minute, this isn't fair. This is wrong. But what does Jesus do? He's in a difficult spot here. But what does he do from verses 5 through verse 9? He turns the corner. He moves from the language of the law, which finds fault, to the language of love, which goes back to God's intent. Have a look at the rest of it. What does he basically say? He basically says in 5 through 9, that, hey, what did God say? What was the plan in the beginning? In the beginning, the idea was that God would make two people one. And so whenever a couple is married, Jesus says, what happens is two become one. Just as God's nature is three in one, so a marital relationship is two in one. And when you have children, they're brought into the oneness of that relationship. So notice what Jesus does. In a very difficult situation, he basically turns the focus off of law with all of its negativity and all of its criticism, and he moves the conversation back to love, and he says, hey, let's remember God's intent. Now, what's important here is that Jesus is not avoiding the issue. He's just saying there's a wise way of dealing with the issue, and the wise way is always remember the language of love. The joy in this relationship is that out of everyone in the world, she has chosen me. We have learned the value of holding on to that in those situations where our relationship is really being tested.
Yeah, so I wonder what are those difficult areas in our lives, in our marriages? What are those difficult issues that we can choose to see the positive in, just like Jesus modeled to us? And when Jesus did that, he did not, like Craig said, not ignore the issues. He challenged the issues, but he was more concerned with the heart and focusing on the positive, not the negative. Because when we focus just on the negative, we become critical, we become cynical, and all we want to do is find fault.
That's right.
So we try, we're not always successful with that, but we really try to focus on the positive intention and highlight love and not law. So again, our first play today is to commit to see the positive and not the negative. And I have a little bit of practical homework for you that I hope you get to do. And we would love to hear from you too when you do it. Probably wondered why this is on the floor. We would love for you to get a couple of these, one each, for you and your spouse. And at your next date night, let's say in a couple of weeks, because it'll probably take you that long to do it, make a poster board. Yeah, take some time, be creative. Create a poster board with all the things that you love and appreciate about your spouse. Ooh, this might feel a little uncomfortable. This is very kind of emotional, and I personally don't even like posting emotional things on social media because I'm kind of private, but here we are asked to share things. So this could be, you can glue on a picture that says something, or it's a memory that you want to put on there, or a favorite phrase, or just things that you love and appreciate about your spouse. And let me just remind everyone, we do that a lot in a lot of other areas. We have vision boards and different things where we highlight all the good things and all the things that matter to us. So why do we not do it with the most important relationship in our lives?
Yeah, activities like this, just honestly, in a personal relationship, are a lot harder to do for some reason than they are in my professional relationships. Right now, we've got a team of people that are working on a vision map, a vision board for our family of churches, because when we started this thing in 2015, it was so small, and now there are over 16,000 people that are meeting every week. This thing has changed, and what we need to do is we recognize the power of seeing the change. Some of us are visual people. Why is it that I can accept the reality of that and the necessity of that in my professional life, but it feels uncomfortable for me in my personal life? So this is uncomfortable with me because being kind of creatively vulnerable in a playful way kind of kills my ego a little bit, and I kind of struggle with that. And maybe you're here, guys, and not just guys, maybe you're like that too. And it's like, Craig, this is really pushing it for me. Well, think about whether you use vision maps in your professional life and ask yourself, how much time do you put into that? How much time could we put into doing something like this? And what we've experienced is when we take that kind of time, it really kills my ego, because playful vulnerability does that for me. But it also does something profoundly positive.
It also,
and we challenge you with it.
It also fills up that love bucket that we often talk about with our kids, fill up that love bucket. But what about our love buckets? Yeah. And just to be reminded of all the good that they see. In the first service, we said, hey, there's an envelope, and there's also a board that I'll give you. Come to us after the service. And the couple who's been married longer than 30 years, so longer than us, so you've grown together a while, who would commit to doing this within the next 2 weeks, will get a little gift card for the gathering round out here, and you'll get one of your two boards. So the couple that got it in the first service, they've been married for 47 years and were eager to do it. And there
come
was
on,
some
we can
other.
Beat that in the second
yeah,
service
so come to us afterwards if you want to commit to doing it. And even if you don't get the prize, but you say, we're going to do this as well, we would love to hear from you. Just like, what has this been like and what has this done for you?
Yeah, and again, putting visual expression to the love that we have. Why? Because it's really important, especially in difficult seasons, to see the positive, to see God's intent. And I hope we all realize that there have been moments in our life where we could not see the joy in what was happening and the blessing of God in what was happening, but later we could. Exercises like this really help us. So we commit to see the positive. It's something that we are intentional about doing. Now, the second play kind of builds on this. We commit to seeing the potential in each other. We commit to seeing the potential in each other. Now, by potential, I'm referring to two things. I'm referring firstly to what the other person can achieve. But it's not just about achievement. There's also a spiritual component to this. It's actually seeing the potential, the purpose that God has for our spouse. So the passage we hold on to here is Ephesians 2:10. We all know Ephesians 2:8-9, right? It's by grace you have been saved, not anything of yourself. But why have we been saved? And this is what verse 10 ultimately carries on. Verse 10 says, basically, that we are, and I personalize this, Vibke is Christ's handiwork, Christ's masterpiece, God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus for good works that he prepared for her in advance. Personalize that. Wiebke is God's masterpiece. Created in Christ Jesus and prepared for the good works that he has for her. When it comes to seeing the potential, we commit to that. We commit to recognizing that God has a plan and a purpose for our lives that our union is supposed to facilitate and to further. Again, this is something that we've been very intentional about. Now, as we've got older, what's interesting with this is this was a commitment we had that was almost easier to accept when we were younger. If you've been married a long time, you probably know so much about your spouse that it's like as though you've grown up together. And so prioritizing this idea of, wait a minute, Wiebke, my spouse has been created, prepared in advance by God for what? Good works in the future. It's something, again, that we need to be intentional about. We've recognized that the longer we've been together, the more intentional we need to be about discerning and discovering God's purpose for our lives. Because Ephesians 2:10 says that for each and every person here who knows Jesus, who's been saved, Ephesians 2:8 and 9, God has created you in Christ Jesus for works that he has for you to do. Now, in the first 10 years of marriage, did I ever think that Wiebke would be working on staff with me? I didn't. We had three young children at home, and it was more like when I got home, it was, here's the kids, I need 10 minutes, rather than the black dress. That's pretty much the way it was. Any guys can identify with that? Or the other way around for you house husbands. That's the way that was. Did I ever envisage a time where Wiebke would be on staff with me? Like, no, I didn't. But what I did envisage was the call on Wiebke's life, because Ephesians 2:10 says it. That God had created this woman and prepared her for works that he has for her to do. And I accepted the responsibility to discerning together with Wiebke how that would play out in her life.
And vice versa.
What's that?
And vice versa.
And vice versa. Yeah, it worked the other way as well. And so this is a really important thing for us. Now, how do we do that? Practically speaking, the way I can describe this to you is it begins by truly getting to know your spouse, truly getting to know them. I love reading, I devour books, but there are a few books I read, again, every 12 and 24 months. One of those books is a book called The Heart of a Leader. In the book, the author traces the background, the story of David before he became king. He traces the story of Moses before he led God people out of slavery into the promised land. He traces the story of Paul before he became the apostle, and he traces the story of Jesus. And the author looks at how God had carefully shaped the heart of those four leaders in their emerging story in preparation for the work that he had them to do. And so a critical part of this for us in embracing the potential in our spouse has been to make sure that we get to understand one another's stories, because God has also been at work in those formative years. And in order for me to truly partner with Wiebke and Wiebke with me and us with God, we need to truly understand those motivating realities in our foundational story.
Yeah, as we talked about today's message, we felt like this was a really important part for people to hear, just how important it is to know your own story, but also to know your spouse's story. I feel like there's a lot of talk out there right now about stories and knowing your story, and I think that's really, really good, and we really want to encourage you to do that work. And I think most people, when they get married, have really not done that, because life is... You're starting your family and stuff. And sometimes it just takes a little while for us to actually see, oh, we have to look at our stories. Not just, we shared earlier, cultural differences that we had or language differences, but there were a lot of other things. Let me just give you an idea of what I'm talking about. Quay grew up as an only child raised by a single mom. They were pretty poor growing up. Craig had a lot of health issues, surgeries, hips, ears. Your father was not part of your upbringing. In fact, that was a really difficult relationship for you all the way through. And so that's just a little bit about you. And there was also a lot of positive things because of your health issues. You were really into learning and then found Jesus and really wanted to serve God. So that was kind of the person I met and married. I, on the other hand, was born and raised in Germany. I was the poor child in the middle out of three. And my parents are still married to this day, over 50 years. And we had a lot of opportunities and things growing up. But as a teenager, I developed an eating disorder, and that led then to years of depression. And so I carried a lot of that junk and brokenness into our marriage. I thought I had dealt with a lot of it, but I really hadn't. There was just a lid on it. So you can already see from the outside, wow, we were just in our early 20s when we got married. Those things had not all been dealt with, and we started in ministry. We had kids right away. So it takes a while sometimes for you to look back and understand, oh, how did my parents deal with things, and why do we deal a certain way? So it really takes understanding ourselves, our own stories, but then also our spouses. I'm so thankful that we live in a day and age where counseling or therapy is not something to be frowned on anymore. People do it, and that is such a great thing. So a lot of us really work through our own stories and some of the broken parts or the good parts with a therapist or counselor. But we feel it's also really important to understand our stories together. And again, we've talked about date nights today a lot already. That's actually a fun conversation. It's not all heavy, it's not all bad. There's so many good parts to our stories, traditions, and all these things that come into it when we say, understand our stories, in order to actually see the potential in one another.
So we've got this playbook, right? And this playbook says, okay, we're going to see the positive. We're going to focus on that. We're going to find the positive even when it's difficult. Secondly, we recognize that we were created in Christ Jesus for a purpose and a plan that he has. We're committed to doing that. And we just recognize that the way that God has placed us, where God has placed us, the experiences that we've gone through, God can and does want to use. And what we've also discovered is that the giftings that we've been given, the passions that we've been given, tie to the story. They tie to God's purpose. And what we've discovered is as we get to know one another at a more deeper level, it becomes so amazingly clear to us why the way we've been gifted in the way that we've been gifted. And so let me just give Vipka as an example. Vipka, you just heard a part of her story there, how much she had to work through. Is it any surprise that Vipka is so good walking alongside people who ultimately are battling things similar to what Vipka's battling? Is it any surprise to me that the gifting she has matches kind of almost her story all the way through? And it's the same the other way around. It is amazing to me how when we get to know one another at that deeper level, we are intentional about investing time in truly knowing one another. Not only does that help us understand the reactions that our spouse has when certain things happen, it can also help us understand, okay, I can see a little bit about where this relationship may go. And that has just been a profoundly positive experience for the both of us.
Mm-hmm. You ready to go to the third play?
Point.
That's actually my favorite play because it's been the biggest game changer for me. And that is, as we look, there's a basketball court. If you think about the game of basketball, whatever game you're thinking of, the game of life, marriage, just I want to encourage you just to step out for a minute and just look at the bigger picture and kind of just like, why am I actually in this game? What is the bigger picture? Why am I doing this? What's the goal? And so for me as a person, as an individual, my goal in life and in this game called life is to follow Jesus, to become more like him, less of me, more of him. That is my goal. That's my overall goal. And that was my goal when we got married, and I know that is your goal too, but it was almost like there were two different plays going on when we got married. There was that goal, following Jesus, knowing Jesus, becoming more like him, less like me. But then there was this marriage game, and I think mine was way more influenced by what I saw in movies, and it was all about can you make my life really good? Can you see me for who I am? Can you, the romantic type, movie type game, and this put a lot of pressure on you, which of course you didn't meet all the time, and that then led to disappointment and frustration and issues. And so I had to really step out and just think, I'm playing two different games here. And I just kind of changed that and said, my game in life that includes our marriage, that includes our journey together, is to serve Christ, to become more like him. And it is not about you meeting my needs or you giving me things that you can't give, or vice versa. It really is for both ways. But that was my biggest game changer, and I'm so thankful. And it's actually led to so much more contentment and joy.
Yeah. I said that when I met Vibka, immediately there was this word in my head, this is the woman that you will marry. I remember being flustered, and you've heard me tell the story before. I went upstairs in a room and I said, God, I don't know what happened there. All I know is that I'm called to Wales. And this idea for me was that somebody would be coming into marriage to help me do my ministry. That's this arrogance of youth. And I remember having a list of names and addresses right there in front of me for everyone, who was 400 people that are part of the team. I knew Vibka's name, and it's pretty unusual. Nobody else was called Vibka in 400 people. So I kind of looked down the list, I found her name, and I saw that her date of birth was March the 1st, which is the St. David's Day, or the July 4 of Wales. And in that moment, I'm like, that's it. This is the woman who's really going to come alongside and compliment me in my ministry. Do you see the selfish nature of that? How selfish we can be, even in our motives to serve God. And I remember getting into marriage, and then, if you know me, I don't go up much, I don't go down much. I'm pretty much like a flatliner. That's what I am. I just flatline. So imagine we're getting into this, and I'm thinking, hey, this thing's going to be great, and she's going to compliment me. And what was amazing was our encounters were on the main square of Berlin, where Vibka was always the last person talking to people, and she was always leading people to Jesus. I was an evangelist at that point, preaching on the streets and in the square. I'm like, this is the one. This is so awesome. And then we get into marriage, and suddenly I realized Vibka's battling depression. That wasn't me. We're dealing with mental health challenges, and this is before the internet. I didn't know what mental health challenges were. I'd never experienced anything like this at all. And I'm sitting there going, God, what is happening here? This can't be good. This can't be right. You know, hindsight is a great teacher, isn't it? Looking back, now I can see what God's doing. Now I can see the bigger picture. Now I can see how God was using all things, even Vibka's struggle and my struggle, to make us and to equip us to be more prepared for the ministries that he's got for us. I can tell you, as a result of this, I am a far more empathetic, competent, aware, compassionate pastor as a result of having to go through this. I would have been so out of touch with so many issues had not the Lord allowed me to go through this. It's the same thing with Vibka. Me working through my daddy issues, and I had daddy issues, has meant that Vibka is so well prepared to walk alongside those spouses who are just dealing with things that their spouse is going through. See, there's a bigger picture involved in all of our stories, in all of our struggles. And what we've recognized is the purpose in our union is not simply for Vibka to make me happy. No, the purpose in our union is ultimately for us to become more like Jesus. Mm. And friends, it's often the struggle in our relationships that does that, not the blessing. Oh, we have so much fun together, and I'm with Vibka. The next 10 years are going to be amazing. But the encouragement I have for you is to just recognize this. God is in your story. God is in your story. If you're here and you're struggling today, God is in your story. If you're here and you're in a season of peace, God is in your story. You see the team on the stage. They're going to sing a song that we love. It's by Katie Nichol and Big Daddy Weave, and basically sing this. It's basically, God is in your story. Our encouragement to you is to live like that, just to think like that. As you listen to the words of this song, let me ask you, when your relationship gets tough, do you revert to the language of the law and find faults, magnify the negative, or do you revert to the language of love? Do you remember God's intent for your relationship? Do you commit not to allow this test to take you down, but to be wise in how you deal with it? When it comes to your marital union, do you think that your spouse exists to make you happy, to meet your needs? Or do you recognize that your significant relationships, whatever they are, have been brought into your life by God to help you become more like Christ so that you can be equipped for the work that God is calling you uniquely to? The best relationship playbook for marriage advice that we can give you is just recognize God is in your story and be as intentional cultivating the spiritual component of your relationship as you are every other aspect. So as you listen to this song, hopefully these words will minister to you as they've done for us. Thanks, guys.
This torn up page is in this book. Words that tell me I'm not good. Chapters that define for so long. By the hands of grace and endless love, dusted off and picked me up. Told my heart that hope is never gone. God is in the story. God is in the details. Even in the broken parts, He holds my heart. He never fails. When I'm at my weakest, I will trust in Jesus. Always in the highs and lows, the one who goes before me. God is in this story.
Maybe new to church, by the way, and you see we clap. Let me just say, there are times when we clap for them, but there's something in the Bible called the clap offering. And it's just basically, God, we thank you. We thank you for everything you've done. We thank you for the gifts and the talents of the people that we have. And we also thank you for the people in our lives. So just for you to know, if we clap, that's what we're clapping for. It's called a clap offering, and it's an important part of it. Just thank you so much for being here. We hope that this has spoken to you and helped you pursue intentionality with all of your relationships. We focused on marriage. In truth, the principles that we unpack here apply to every significant relationship. Next week, Pastor Dan Seaborn's going to be in. He's going to be talking about the family. You know how important family is to Dan. That's why he started a ministry called Winning a Home. So that's just going to be great. Dan's going to continue that. If something we shared today struck you, then please do feel free to go out of the doors here off to the right. We have a care room, and a team of people would be delighted to pray with you. If you're a guest of ours, we'd love to connect with you as well. Travis and Hayden will be outside over at the tables. But other than that, I hope you have a wonderful week. Thank you for joining us. And again, come to the front here and just take that challenge of really putting a visual to your relationship. Have a great week. See you all soon. God bless.